from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Straight Talk. I'm Dave Giuliano, and in the co-pilot seat, as usual, is Marty Haynes.
Hey everybody.
We're going to have a little bit of a round table discussion. I guess it'll be almost like a square table discussion, really,
yeah,
because
there's
four of us.
Yeah.
And we're sitting in front of our oval table anyway. They're on Skype, so. But we have some members of NJ Rope with us. So far, the computer hasn't cut out, so Frank hasn't, you know, screwed us with his ability to totally mess the show up. And
so what's this, six times and we got you on, what, once?
This will be twice. That's correct, yes.
All right.
Yes, fourth try. And don't blame me, it's not me. It must be that spirit running around your store that's doing it.
It's not him, but he's not here and we're connected, right?
Yeah, imagine that. Hey, you can introduce them because I forgot their names already.
It's Frank Lazzaro and your friend, your tech manager?
Joe Gates.
How you guys doing?
Joe Gates is a cousin.
Okay.
All right, so that's how you're funded, huh? So now, when I was away in Gettysburg, was that the week you guys talked, or was it the week before?
No, the week before.
Hey, you guys had a show that we weren't able to connect again because Frank was here, so that nothing connected. But you guys had talked about a little interesting topic for a little roundtable discussion. So
we started discussing spirit release. And was it removing the unhaunting houses and how people claim they can do it and where the spirits actually go and why they're still around?
Correct.
And Frank came up with some really good theories.
Which I'm probably not going to remember now, but that's okay. We'll give it our best, right?
It has been a couple weeks.
I thought you had all this written down, Frank.
And I remember, those thoughts, they come and go real quickly, so, for me.
We didn't record that conversation, because we had about an hour-long conversation when we couldn't get on the radio. It was really good.
We did. We sat there for a while and talked. Yes, we did.
When you think about it, I guess, the times that he's been here, and we've always wound up talking, we probably have done, at least five interviews with him, and we've never thought to actually just record
just
while
we were
there.
Yeah, right.
That could have been our shows for backup when we can't connect, so.
There you go.
So where do...
Next time I'm in, you can do that.
So was it spirit release you guys were talking about? And then where do they go?
Yeah.
The concept was initially Marty had mentioned to me that there are people that believe they can do it and actually charge money to do it.
Right.
And that just throws us off on a different tangent with, where are they to start with? I mean, the idea of whether they're sitting with us in the living room while we're talking to you or if they're, in another plane of existence or time zone or who knows. So, just where they possibly could be. And I think a lot of it depends on, I was doing some research on it. And, it might depend on religion a little bit as well and beliefs.
Oh, definitely. I think a lot of it depends on religion and beliefs and whether you even have a belief of life after death.
Now, is that where you think they wound, you're saying where they think they are?
Right.
Or where they stay because of their religion? Oh.
Where we perceive them to be. I mean, when we're doing our EVP sessions and you get a response, are you actually talking to a spirit that's in a room with you, say sitting on a couch next to you, or are you by some means connecting to them in another, say from heaven, okay, or a purgatory, or it's a wild concept, but maybe, another time zone, or somehow you're crossing paths, or you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah,
so
really I think
that, really concrete proof of anything.
I think a lot of it. If we you almost have to put aside. Let's put aside the religious labels today. I can take.
As
the,
you sit there.
I have my collar on today. It's Good Friday, so I thought I'd get dressed up. But we put the labels on them. But if you just put what exactly or where exactly is heaven?
What is heaven?
Right, but if we picture it as a specific place, scientifically, if we were going, would it be defined as another planet, another dimension? I mean, what would it be? If it's another place, it is a something. So if they're not there and they're on their way there, or they're not there yet, they're still on the road to that place. These are physical locations.
Yeah, but you also, you know, how many levels of them? Because how many times do you ask a spirit how many spirits are in the building and they say, just me, and you know there's other spirits in the building that they're not connecting with?
So I don't think whether, I think the labeling is what confuses some people necessarily, of saying like multiple dimensions or multiple layers and tiers. It may be that, but does it matter if we call it heaven, purgatory, dimension, planet? Does it really matter? I mean, we know they're physical places.
Right.
So now having erased that, now you can go, obviously there's layers.
Yes.
Okay, there's certain ones that can see, like you just said. They see that there's, they feel they're the only ones there when people who are sensitive or maybe other evidence of EVPs obviously say there's more than that there. Now, are they coming from a further distant location, or are they very close by, just in different like layers and tiers?
Energy levels.
Well, what I'd like to ask is, what do you think about why we're not getting that information from them themselves after all the questions we ask?
You know, there's some good books to read by Constantinos, actually. I'm trying to think. It's an 8-step method on how to record EVPs. And it takes you from what we're doing now and then works your way up to the point where you're almost having full conversations with them, slowly progressing over years. And having worked with someone who's done this, a member of my group years ago, who became obsessed with EVPs, he opened up his equipment case. It was like, you know, 12, 13 audio recorders and a camera. That was it. And he would, no matter what he would use like the Raoul-Dive diode instead of a microphone. He would use no microphones. He was getting full sentence answers. He was getting answers back and forth. And the Constantinos books and in some of the other researchers' books, like on the American EVP Association and some of the early writings of Raoul-Dive and Jurgensen, some of those people got explanations on how to communicate or even got guidance on like turn it up or just little things like that, don't use this, little snippets letting them know that this recorder's not working, let's try something else or change it up. But all the way to the point where some of them got really good information from people that they claimed were spirit operators, that there's spirits on the other side that they teach other spirits how to communicate and how to come through or enable the process. It's got to be difficult even for those that are even more adept and have more experience doing it. Otherwise, obviously, there would be like, yeah, you just could download a little text sheet on how to connect and they would get one on their side and we'd have phone conversations.
Right.
So it's got to, I think, the difficulty and the level of energy you must need to be able to absorb and expend to actually get the EVP out there is what causes the problem. And instead of trying to...
That's why you get fragments, bits and pieces of it. You don't get full sentences all the time. And
maybe so.
Since when you're recording, this may be your one shot with this one person to get that message out that you've been trying to get out to somebody. Are you going to... You don't know how much time you have, how many words you're going to say, if they're even going to find it. It's like a message in a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be short and concise as possible anyway. So you're going to waste time on the one chance giving some directions that may help them if they ever came back to try to record in that exact time, exact space, and to you again. That would be like really, you know, putting out there a lot of energy for a chance happen that may never happen again. So I think that's why it plays into it too. Spirits probably are going to try to get what they can get out of the whatever's available.
What are you saying? That you have to get answers, you have to talk to an entity that is there or known to be there most of the time? Or
see, that there's like a big debate now. We know spirits come in and out. We know spirits visit.
Because
your relatives, you have your relatives.
Right.
You have transient spirits that aren't always in that building. You have ones that you may that may be physically there. So there's three different categories right there. Could they all communicate? Sure. That's like, there may be ones that like a visiting relative, they go to wherever they need to go. and that's where they spend most of their time. They come back. They're aware now, for whatever reason, that the people in the house have people looking into what's going on, trying to make that connection. Kind of like what a medium does when the medium's mm-hmm. making that, facilitating that connection with that spirit.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
So they come back, and they're not really, they weren't always present, but they're able to come in close enough that we can pick up that voice. That could be, you know, maybe that's a long distance call as opposed to a local call. But it still seems to work the same way.
Well, then how would you explain that? I mean, I guess in a sense, I mean, that's one thing when it comes to voice recorders. You can say they're from somewhere else, or like you're saying, they happen to come close enough. Not everybody uses them, but say a K2 meter. Now, a lot of interference can come through a K2 meter as well, as we know. But there's certain circumstances where the information that comes across a K2 meter, it's a little indisputable. So they actually have to physically contact that K2 meter. So does that make them standing right next to you?
See, now, the K2, to me, that's a whole other thing. Because, first of all, you don't know with the K2, is it an audible signal? There's a lot of issues with the K2 to begin with.
Absolutely. Well, but, even if you're talking about, like, the sample, flashlight.
Just to point it out.
And the trigger project.
That's more of a close contact than a voice recording.
Yeah, or a trigger, let's say any trigger object. Whether it's like the trigger objects with the trains or a K2 or the flashlight, anything like that. Yeah, that is definitely more interaction, but... again, you're kind of limited in you're limited to yes, no,
right?
And you're not really you can't get in unless you've really got a spirits hanging out a long time where you're going to go down the alphabet and have things spelled out. But you know, they kind of call that the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. So you know, most people aren't going down that road either to find out a name or any more details.
And that's got to be a little bit easier because all they have to do is come close enough to that item to make it react. Instead of putting out the words, and you know, you take a breath to talk, but to set off a tri-field, you just walk past it, or you lean forward. So it's probably
it could
less,
be 30 feet away or whatever, you know. So it's
right. So it's probably less energy for them to interact with something like that than it would be to come forward with words. I think.
See, now, to me, the interaction with the trigger objects is just as good evidence as EVPs.
Oh yeah,
EVPs again were. EVPs still take a backseat to photos, which I don't understand why. I've gotten some pretty good apparition photos. Mm-hmm. I would kill for
apparition photo. It's just as good as EVP evidence if it's a good one.
I would rather have the EVP evidence. It's more personal. You have something they said, a thought, even if it's one or two words. It's something more tangible.
In their voice.
In their voice, right? That was directly imprinted onto a device. You know. With the apparition photos, we don't even know if that's an apparition that's currently physically manifesting there, or is it a residual, energy we're capturing that we don't even know if it's there. I guess EVPs, if they're interactive, they're answering a question. We know they're not residual. Then we know it's a spirit, whether it's physically there or one connecting from a distance. It's still connecting with us.
Well, if you can have if you can collect video evidence of a, and you say it's residual, like what's on a tape, could you have the same thing with an EVP?
Sure.
Yeah, I think we can because we know we can. We obviously we observe it. People observe it, but we've also there's video clips out there of there's some great ones from Gettysburg.
Yeah,
I think it's the
I've seen that one.
It was a ghost lab. Mm-hmm. They're one of the soldiers marching in formation with the flag.
Right.
In broad daylight, I mean, that's very crystal clear, and you see them disappear over the ridge, and that's got to be residual. So I would assume if it can be video, it could be audio too.
And we've captured audio recordings in a private home. We had a voice recorder set up in a room. There was nobody there. No investigators in the room. And for whatever reason, the recording came across and said, "Try some soup, Mama said." And crazy EVP as it sounds, it had absolutely no bearing on anything. I mean, there's nobody in the room, but when you look at the history of the home itself, the home was located on a battlefield, all right, in an area where they were known to set up field tents, for medical field tents. And the first thought that came to my mind was, after researching the property, was that you would have, what would they feed mass quantities of soldiers?
Right.
Soup. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have that possibility there. That was just residual. It was just locked in. Why we captured it, I have no idea. But it was absolutely no questions asked. The room was empty for about, good 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think that the the ones that are out of context, the EVPs that we that don't make sense to us, I think that's a good chance that a lot of them are residual. And why are we catching them? Again, you don't know. Is it the person? I honestly always thought.
I think it's the same, for the same reason that it appears at the same time. I think it's that there's enough energy there for it to interact with whatever equipment we're using.
I think it's the person who's recording the EVP plays a role, their energy or something, because like the guy I was talking about that did all the recordings, I mean, he never walked, he changed our whole way of approaching how we did EVPs. I guess he left the group probably about maybe like 6 years ago. But up until that point, when we'd go out, if we got one EVP that was maybe like a B class, we were like so ecstatic, like, wow, we got this many. You know, it was huge. Now, if we go out on an investigation, get under 10, we're like, wow, it's a pretty lousy night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just the way we approach it.
Capture 20 to 30 of them. Now, I'm actually afraid to put that on report saying it's got to be fake. It can't be real.
But do you see, in your group, more people getting them than other people? Or is it across the board?
Well, you say you don't get
them. I don't get them as much.
I walk away with 10 or 15 at a shot.
I see.
Particular investigators?
Yeah, like, I can notice.
Investigators, yes.
We have, like.
Certain ones that get them more than others, yes.
I mean, I've watched this over a period of now, like 14 years of having normally like anywhere from 20 to 30 investigators. There are always people that you can count on that almost any place they go, they're getting EVPs. And you can also count on ones like me that can go and try and record for 3 or 4 hours and get nothing constantly. So it's like, I really think it the person plays a role in it.
We had an investigator who was from England at one point in the group, and we were going through Haddonfield. We had an investigation in Haddonfield, and, there's a lot, back in colonial days, England, obviously played a large role in this area. So she was getting all sorts of EVPs, and we thought that possibly it was because of the era. They recognized her voice, her accent, and her voice, and they were responding to her. So
that's
ironic you just mentioned that, because we just had an incident off the topic of EVPs, but we had a very, very wild incident happen to us in a chapel. It's an old stone chapel in a cemetery near the store. We were doing a cemetery training. One of our trainees is from England. And we actually had some stuff shooting around, and we were seeing some apparitions and everything. But it got to the point where he started talking, and he was doing that. We would only get the interactions or getting notice the movements and stuff when he was talking. We finally put two and two together that they may be reacting off his accent. Mm-hmm. Where we sound funny, he didn't to them.
Right.
So he started talking to them more. His half of his body went cold, and people feel that all the time. Like you feel a cold on your one side of your body as opposed to your other. We were actually able to measure this with the non-contact thermometers. We did the ambient air. The ambient air all around him was the same temperature, but when you put the non-contact thermometers on opposite sides, going across his skin and his clothing and everything, he was consistently 20 degrees colder on the side he felt colder, as opposed to the other side, which was wild. And there's no explanation for it, because the ambient air was not right. And this went on for like 15 minutes at least. Again, with shadows darting in and out. I mean, we tried to get him. We had the trigger props. We had everything else set up. But this is something I've never seen anything like this before. I've never was able to record that temperature drop. But I think it all keyed off of him making that connection with them and the voice. And the questions he asked. He was asking questions.
True. Like I said, we had the exact sample. It was a house. Well, sorry, it was an old funeral home in Haddonfield, and the same thing happened. We couldn't help but to notice that every time there was an EVP, it was her speaking.
And you can notice that, Frank, you've met me in person. Marty knows. You get a little jaded after doing this for a while and doing so much stuff. You don't get excited about everything. Mm-hmm. You can probably tell that I'm, excited about that. And I even got emails from some people that were there that night saying it was nice to see you get like that jazzed up about something, because it the great part about this field is you are going to see something you've never experienced before.
Always learning.
And you never know when it's going to happen. And when it happens, you're kind of like in awe of, wow, I can't believe this is going on right in front of me.
Something different, right?
Yeah. So that was awesome. Well,
can I ask you a question?
Sure.
All the new techniques and equipment we have out there, where do you see this going in the future as far as what we're going to learn about? Are we going to learn a lot more about what's going on? Or
I think that it's definitely opening up the door more. Things like the real-time EVP recorders. You have the RT-EVP, but now there's also one that's out by Sony that...
We got that.
Yeah, we're gonna be carrying that shortly too.
Mark's great too. Just so you know, for reference, it is a great.
I got to listen to a playback when I went to Gettysburg 2 weeks ago for Phenomenology 4, and one guy that's actually that's the reseller for it and deals with it. He was there, and he came over and showed me. Instead of having like 1 to 60 second time delay that you pick, it's like a 0.05 second delay. So it's really literally real time.
Very real time.
But when you hear the playback, it's like your studio recorded. I mean, it's like that quality.
Yeah,
and I was just listening over little crappy headphones. Mm-hmm. And it was
a couple of them, and they're great. Yeah, I love them.
So something like that, should you get a spirit that has enough energy, that's able to get through and communicate, you're on the phone with them.
Mm-hmm.
The possibilities. Now, if you combine that, and then you can get them to do a trigger prop too, where if they run out of energy, they can't do the EVPs, but you've established someone's there, maybe you have a name now, and then you can continue it with them just by a yes-no conversation, and they're able to hang in there and stay, and you're at the right place, right time, all that. Right now, the technology that wasn't there a year ago is there now for more... in-depth conversation and more details possible.
You don't get everything though. I mean, I've walked around with them for several investigations now, and you don't hear everything. There are still EVPs you capture on when you go back and review it.
Right.
So you have to be on your game.
That's the main theory of EVPs. This was why the RT EVP still is different than this one. This one's a true real time recorder, but because it's that delay is so quick. The theory behind it is that the spirit's actually not recording through the microphone. They're imprinting directly onto the recording device itself. So when the RT EVP, it actually is rewinding, or if you think in the modes of tape, but it's actually going back to that previous, I usually keep mine for 6 to 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's going back that 10 seconds and playing that back. That's why you might hear it there. With the playback of the 0.5, since it's so close to real time, the imprint might happen and boom, you've already moved on. And the playback didn't have time to play it back. It was so short.
Well, the RT is the same way. I mean, I leave mine at 15 seconds and I still go back and find recordings that I didn't hear.
That you didn't. So that's even bypassing the imprint mm-hmm. altogether. So, I mean, that's the predominant theory. We've done experiments with multi-track recording studios when, like, portable ones or ones on computers. We have one of our members is a sound engineer. He brought multi-track recorders. We would put microphones all throughout the house, and we're talking about, like, you know, $2,000 studio mics set up. So they're going to pick up everything. And we would get A-class EVP, say, like, in a bedroom upstairs on the second floor, and then the same EVP at the same time in the basement, but none of the other mics in between would pick it up at all. And you could tell which mic got it because they're all recording simultaneously, but on separate tracks. So the microphone didn't play a role in that because all the mics should have picked it up if it was loud enough to be picked up between two floors. It was imprinted directly onto the recording device. Is that the only way it happens? I don't know. I think there's probably multiple ways.
No, because how many times have you heard a disembodied voice and been able to pick it up? I mean, you can't always, but there are times where you actually physically hear it and it still picks it up.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Right.
Now, have you guys ever heard something that everybody's heard, like a loud sound or even a voice that didn't record? But we heard dogs barking at one point at that same house.
Mm.
And it was super loud. We actually looked like in their backyard to see if there was a dog right out the window, and there wasn't.
Hmm.
None of the recorders.
A lot of those. Mostly it's on recording, but the we did last investigation. We did have a pretty clear whoa. You know, everybody heard it. Everybody said, "Whoa, what was that?" You know, and there was nobody around. No way of explaining it.
But did you? What was it on the recorder when you played it back?
No, we all heard it with our ears.
See, that's what I think is even cooler, because that's the disembodied voice.
Yeah.
That's clairaudience. Right. That's the psychic ability to hear.
Right.
So the technology isn't going to help you there. So it's a combination of a lot of things. I really think, and you know, we don't know what's around the corner. Actually, I know some of the things that are around the corner, but I can't say them yet. But this, trust me, there's a lot. If that's what's around the corner, the leaps and bounds we're making, we're, for researchers who are really into this and serious, we're going to make a lot of headway. Are we going to make headway with skeptics and proving ghosts exist? Now, my statement still hasn't changed. I don't believe in my lifetime we're ever going to definitively prove that ghosts exist, because what is, would be required just by the scientific community is impossible. They can't test it. No. They can't use the scientific method.
Feel it, say,
right.
Yeah.
There's no experimentation. There's nothing that can be done on command. So all
that's
the,
what I'm saying. I mean, it's such a big question mark, you know.
Well, that's why a lot of the groups try to they consider themselves like mainstream scientific proof, and yeah, more power to them. I'm not putting them down at all, but I think they're kind of missing the mark and not leaving themselves open minded enough, because
yeah, well, I don't think that applies.
Yeah, this isn't something you can apply the scientific method to. Yeah, they claim to, but you cannot apply the scientific method to an unknown quantity.
But how many of those groups have you heard say, yes, I'm all scientific, I don't do anything else, but when I walked in the building, I felt like I needed to be here?
Right. Because
right off the bat, they felt something.
But they don't realize. See, they don't put that two and two and right. say that's my intuition, my right. psychic ability, my sensitivity. They don't, because that's a taboo word for them. But it's, yeah, whether you call it your gut feeling, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter. We all have it. But that place, I mean, we're one of the most important pieces of equipment we bring on an investigation, our senses.
Definitely.
Sure.
Even the ones we're not aware of that we have. You know?
I've seen people when we go out on the ghost hunts from the store to different locations, and I've seen where people, you know, have that piece of equipment in their hand, and they're, talk to me, show me that you're here, and, you know, you take it out of their hand, and they're like, oh my God, there's something standing behind me. Well, it's been there for 10 minutes. But because right. you were so intent on that piece of equipment and having that work for you, you didn't feel, and you lost all that.
I'm seeing a comment on the chat board by Kat. It was interesting about the Constantinos have claimed that they've heard EVPs in rain. And actually, I'm thinking, she put it up a couple minutes ago, and I've been thinking, that makes actually kind of sense, because I don't know if you guys have ever used white noise. I've used white noise on a CD, but I've also used turning on like the kitchen or bathroom faucets and let the water run to create that white noise, because the theory behind that is the more white noise is pretty much every sound all just put together. If you can give them that, they may be able to manipulate that sound. And
spirit box is that kind of thing.
Right, so spirit box. It gives them the ability to kind of form words out of that sound that's there. Well, rain would kind of be the same thing.
Sure.
It would be white noise on a larger scale, so it wouldn't surprise me that if someone was recording rain, that they would find EVPs in there.
And the rain, the water is energy, so it's
right.
just feeding that.
Charged, it's yep. charged water.
Yep.
As I say, water would be a source of energy as well.
Well, you know what would be real cool if you could say, if you get contact with somebody and you're hearing it on your RT EVP and you say, well, listen, if I play white noise, is it easier for you to respond to me? And they said, yeah. He said, that'd be nice. And I'd like that.
You know, when you get that, see, that's the when you find a place that you go to a lot, you really have to be dedicated to. We all have our favorite places that we wind up getting into a lot and have a lot of trips there. You need to be dedicated and focused enough to keep going back and repeat it, no matter how many times you get nothing, to stick with something like that and ask those questions, because that's when you're going to get those kind of results. You need it over a long period of time.
And I think it depends on the spirit,
yeah,
too.
That's exactly. I mean,
if
I'm trying to find that out. Like, you know, what is life after death like? Give us a hint, you know? I ask those questions all the time.
Well, maybe they can't. Maybe they're not permitted.
We,
right.
When we were at Gettysburg, it was a retired cop that came up, and he runs one of the tours up there. And he was asking me about spirit rescue. Mm-hmm. About sending spirits on, because he was hearing a lot of, he was able to hear some stuff, and he does recordings too, and he actually uses the spirit box. But some of the stuff he was getting through the spirit box was like so unique and distinct and clear. I didn't think it was any kind of outside interference. It seemed to be definitely saying stuff directly to him, which I've never really heard before. I mean, I've heard people claim it, but I've never actually spoke to someone. And he was giving me really good descriptions of phrases and words that wouldn't have been picked up on current radio stations if you were just scanning frequencies. And a lot of it had to do with help, basically. But one, he kept feeling it was the same voice over and over again. So I said, well, why don't you get like a safe word, like a code word, that if it's him the next time, you would know it's him, and that way you know you're talking to the same person. You can start the conversation going down. So this guy's going out to the same places every night with different groups, but it's always him there using the same equipment. He came back twice. The word he chose that night was he thinks he knows the guy's name because the name's come over a couple times. He told that spirit that call me dude. Dude is something that we use nowadays. It's like a male-to-male kind of friendly greeting to somebody. He said that wouldn't be something that would be used in your time, so it wouldn't jump out as being something, you know, wouldn't be something a Civil War spirit would necessarily say. He came back twice.
That's pretty interesting.
He came back twice during that weekend. The very next night he went out, the first word that came over the spirit box was, hey, dude.
Nice.
So, and then I said, okay. And then he came back before the end. He said another night he went out, and he got the same thing. Hey, dude! And then he was able to have a couple other conversation with him before this. So now he's got he knows he has a keyword, he has a key location.
Yeah, well, that,
now he can start developing that.
Try that actually. I think.
See, that's the bonus of, I guess, living in Gettysburg and running a ghost tour. You know, when you're doing that 7 nights a week or whatever, and you're going out every night to the same place. Doing the same thing, somebody who's hanging out there is going to recognize you, and you're going to have that. Unfortunately, with most of us, we're not going out to a place probably often enough to get that recognition of a spirit. So
know. I've been to Fort Modern an awful lot.
So I mean, if there's places that you wind up going a lot, that's the ones you really need to be even more, I guess, disciplined in and sticking with that same, you know, MO and just focusing on the EVPs, just focusing on the same questions in the same spots.
When I go to Gabriel Davis.
I do that. Case May 11, for instance, in Fort Mifflin, we had a particular conversation there with, could have been anybody, but it was, you know, a male spirit in that particular case, mate. And
Bruce's name was Bruce.
It wasn't the name of the guy. The conversation of pancakes, strange conversation, came up. Because, you know, and they used to... over at the fort, in the morning you'd go and they'd have a pancake breakfast for you the next morning after you investigate it for the evening. So
right.
Started talking about, you know, pancakes. I guess we're all getting a little hungry. And said, we used the word flapjacks. Is there flapjacks another name for pancakes? And we got a response. You know, yeah. Or I forget, it was like, yeah, I think. So, but anyway, every time I go into that particular casemate now, I bring up the flapjacks. Just see if I can reestablish contact with that particular entity. And, Haven't been successful yet at this point in time, but every single time I've been there since, I've done that. So it sort of does. I guess it does apply.
See, now that'd be a good. That's a good method. That is applying to me. You can't apply pure science, I guess, but that's applying a scientific technique to it because you're being consistent. That's your control. Is that word? The chance of someone else going in there and starting off the conversation with flapjacks probably, you know, astronomically high. So if you do get another hit. Especially if it's something that recognizes. I mean, imagine if they said pancake back. Yeah. You know, then you know you're talking to the same one. I mean, that'd be even more. I think we're slowly but surely we're all moving in the right direction, and we're getting more people that are building devices or adapting devices specifically for what we need them, instead of having devices built for us by people who have no idea. Even the Sony recorder, was built by Sony, but it was modified on the specs of people who are researchers in this field.
Right.
So they had a direct hand in it. And there's a lot more things that are coming out now, including, you know, future cameras and other things that are coming out that I know I've been asked to team up with someone and work on a new camera system. Working basically off the theory of the different spectrums of light, but not not necessarily combining them, but scanning through them.
Okay.
If you picture them all, you have different layers and frequencies of infrared light and UV light. What if you could isolate the different frequencies like slices and scan through those slices till you found a hit on something and then focus in on that one frequency? What if you could do that?
That'd be awesome, because then you could... Yeah.
Now, there's people who have this technology. They need to know what we'd be looking for in it. And that's where the combination, where you see that the people that have the technology are now coming to people in the field and saying, hey, because we're being taken more seriously thanks to, you know, more media coverage, more TV shows, and more, I think, people like, you know, like your group and our group that are, represent the paranormal community better, that they're willing to work with us now.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, of course, you know, a lot of their motivation is going to be monetary.
Well, it's
getting a lot better. Because of the fact that there's a lot more people involved in it than there used to be, and the money's there because you're buying equipment.
Right. And I think that's probably their main motivation, but they could just easily just put something out on their own, like a lot of people do, without any, you know, research, development, anything like that, and then they wind up having to go back and tweak it and come out with Model 2, Model 3, Model 4. Had they asked someone who actually was going to be the person using it, they probably could have just stuck with Model 1 and got it right the first time. And you see a lot of that out there, but less of it, because I think we got more people who are more vocal. I know when we get stuff here, I want to test it first.
Yeah.
We got some new things they're supposed to. I was asking Marty today, did they come yet? Two new test models of a new piece of equipment with new technology built into it, because I said I'm not going to sell it unless I can see it now first and get to test it. And then before you put it out there for mass production, maybe give you a few tweaks for it so you don't have to do the next model, you know?
And they did that a lot with the millimeter. It seems like a millimeter's got how many different variations now?
Well, he's combining a lot of stuff. See, but like with the millimeter, that's kind of a good example. I got to test drive the very first version of it. I think, Marty, you were there too that night at Smithville Mansion.
Yeah.
He UPS'd his prototype down, the one model that existed, and it basically had just the EMF and the temperature built into it. That was it. And it had the green back screen. We loved it.
I got him one, yeah.
Except for the green back screen. I said the green light kind of is a blinding in
it's
a way.
Bright, yeah.
He was marketing that as a flashlight, using the backlit screen as a way to be able to see if you're taking notes, or you could actually turn it around, light up the room. And, you know, a lot of screens, you know, most digital screens are even calculators or things like that. And tools, they were green backlit. So he was going with what the industry standard was. And then I think he told me he saw it on Taps when he finally put out the first, like, I think first two series. And when they walked by the camera with the green backlit light on, it actually whited out the camera because it was so bright. And I know we had experiences where we were at Fort Ticonderoga. We were out in the trenches out in front of the fort. And with the green backlit screen, we couldn't see more than 6 inches past the trench out into the battlefield.
Right.
So we actually had to wind up turning off.
Right.
We had to actually turn off the backlit screens and use our red lens flashlights. And that's when he modified it to the red night vision friendly back screen or backlit device and the red light flashlight. But I mean,
turn on and off now. Yeah.
Right, exactly. They're all things, but see, that comes through like learning and tweaking it. But I think everything you've seen now, though, when you see a newer device come out, they're very conscious of the night vision aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like, this was before when, I mean, Gary was probably one of the first people ever to build something for the paranormal community. So he had a lot, yeah, and he's got a lot more people putting input. And when he comes out with a new device now, he's got, you know, it wasn't just me and two other people testing stuff. He's got hundreds of people that test it, give him the critique, and he tweaks it now. So you see less of the, you know, changes in design over time. Now he just, everything he can think of that's a new design, like the shadow detector, you know, the first thing he did was put that inside a millimeter, because I like the concept, because if I can carry five pieces of equipment
in one hand,
it makes life a lot easier.
That's what I'm saying.
You know?
Consolidating the equipment is the best thing, because I don't know how many times I got so many things in my hand, I don't know what to do with them all. I mean, I'm walking in a dark room.
Yeah, I got one of those, the ghost hunter, the vests. Yeah, the hunting vests with all the different pockets in it.
Yeah, okay.
But I lose stuff in there because there's so many pockets. I can't figure out where I put the thing at. And whatever I'm looking for, it's in the last pocket I get to, and that's I needed it as soon as possible. And by the time I find it, it's too late already. So it's like... And I'm always putting stuff down in the dark, too, and then walking away and forgetting it, so...
And in the light.
And in the light, yeah. But the dark doesn't help anything, and everything's always dark-colored or black or something, so...
We have a couple of members who use the vest, and they make out pretty well with them.
I used to use the utility belt, too, like my little Batman utility belt with the pouches. You have to come up... Everyone comes up with their own little design. All I know is pockets don't work. I even went with the cargo pants and the BDUs, and you know, if you're up and down like me, like I might be sitting, I might be kneeling, laying, then standing up again. You can't have those pockets filled with stuff. I mean, that's just, you're crushing stuff. It's crushing against your leg. I've seen people even some of them still carry like the little backpacks around in the sacks, but then you're constantly digging in there. There's no good way of carrying all that stuff. So if you got something, one piece of equipment that does a whole bunch of things, hey, that's great. You know, it's one less thing I got to carry.
What about incorporating a voice recorder into some kind of meter?
You know, that was, I'm sure it's still on his planning board because it was 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah. He was talking about.
There's a couple companies out there that have it on their planning board.
Well, oh, yeah, right.
That's a real hassle when you're walking around. You know, for instance, I use a lanyard around my neck and you know, from time to time. Obviously, you hear that brushing noise.
Right.
You know, when you. It's a real pain, you know. So, yeah, and then you get to the point where you take the voice recorder off and you're carrying it. You know, I said, with just like, you know, it's less interference. Then you have your millimeter in the other hand, and you got your camera in this hand, and you know, you got my go-go gadget arm that comes out and carries the extra piece of equipment that I couldn't carry in two regular arms. You know, so it's a that would be a great great idea to have.
And you want to bring it all with you too. I mean, you don't have to go back and get something, so you're gonna take everything you think you want to use.
You know what? I've seen some people use. I know they hang them on the lanyard, but I've seen them use the lapel microphones because they kind of clip in place. So you're not going to get. They have the little windscreen on them, but you're not going to have the brushing sound either.
Well, I got those little Sony ones.
Yeah, the little round ones. You get the stereo one, right?
End up. They're the stereo ones exactly, but they're great because they do prevent some of the rubbing noise. But even still, it's not perfect.
That something with a, well, even the camcorder at least has that audio built in. But like I can see eventually coming up with a millimeter that's going to have a recorder built into it, a camera built into it, a video camera built into it, Wi-Fi that sends your video clip and your photos automatically to your computer or to a remote base unit in a truck outside.
It's going to be a little heavy to carry,
though, isn't it? No, because the electronics keep getting smaller and smaller, you know. And all this will run off a 1.9-volt battery for, like, you know, 24 hours. So I see it coming. It's just a matter of time.
Good.
Well, getting back to that guy, Constantino.
Uh-huh.
You're telling us that he can teach you how to get more responses, more in-depth responses from EVPs.
I wish I knew the name of the book off the top of my head, but I actually have it. I know it's a multi-step ways to communicate with the dead. I think it's like 8 different steps.
I'd like to check that out.
And it gives you. It starts out with the techniques we're kind of using now. And as you slowly start progressing through it, now I've never met anyone that's gone up to the point where, you know, the book claims that you know you're getting like the paragraphs and the real detailed stuff. But I have worked with somebody who I watched go from getting one word answers that were just ambiguous out there to getting follow up or intelligent responses. To getting follow-up question responses and to the point where they were full sentences, which is something that's very uncommon. And I haven't worked with anybody since then but like I said, this was EVPs became his complete life and hobby. When he wasn't at work and he wasn't out with us on an investigation, he was out somewhere. I just heard from him recently. He's still he hasn't been in the group like in 6 years. He still goes to like Fort Mifflin and two of his favorite cemeteries at least like two or three times a week because he's retired and still does all the EVP work. So he's putting that much time into it. You're fine-tuning that ability. If we are part of the process, if we are part of what makes, you know, maybe like the antenna that mm-hmm. kind of helps the process along, the more you do practice, the better you're going to get at it, the more in tune you become with it.
Right.
Because some of his stuff was, we still use it at our lectures as examples of really high-quality A-class interactive EVPs, because we never got anything to surpass that.
It just brings me back to a thought that you had with our that we had from our last conversation when the remember I mentioned to you about how an EVP had said, push Frank, okay, and you responded to me, and it stuck with me since, and I've always thought of it since then. And it's just, obviously this gentleman here has the right idea. When you brought up to my attention that, well, how do you know the spirit wasn't saying, push Frank out of the way?
Right.
Right.
So it'd be nice to be able to get something, you know, or find technology that would allow us to
get that extra word or syllable. Off. Yeah, instead of the get out, it's like get out the cards. I want to play poker. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, right. that makes a difference between putting the for sale sign up in the house, calling the priest, or, you know, maybe leaving a deck of cards out on the table. Yeah. You know?
Exactly. So it's going to be interesting to see how far it goes. I mean, I hope you guys, you know, being in the forefront with the store, hope you guys can come up with something that will allow us to do that.
Whenever people ask, and I had a lot of discussions, the Phenomenology event was really cool. It was over 4 days in Gettysburg, and it was a wide variety of people. A lot of ideas, a lot of just, especially after hours, after the public leaves, it's all the people that are there, all the paranormal investigators, all the people who are doing this. And you get a lot of people who are inventing equipment or have design ideas. There's a lot of shop talk like that. And it was very interesting, some of the ideas that they were coming up with that, you know, maybe 5 years ago would have seemed far-fetched. But with the electronics and the technology that's available now, and just some of the things, like, you know, I can't go into detail about the one item, but it was, I got to see the like one of the prototypes about it, and it was... It was just...
Tell us something.
It's going to be video, infrared video, audio, and thermal imaging for well under $600. And instantly transfer...
Infrared, then. Why wouldn't you go full spectrum?
Well, you could probably just... That would be something you could just throw in. That would matter. If you can change from full spectrum, I mean from infrared to thermal imaging, you could easily put in the lens for full spectrum. Yeah, it's going to be all in one unit. And it's going to, I mean, thermal imaging now, we're talking about just for ones that take stills. If you want to get a thermal imaging camera that records audio or records video or even has a video jack, you're still talking about $7,000.
Yeah.
So something that's going to be like...
Oh, I know. That's ridiculous.
If you're going to get something that's under $600 that records and it will allow you to transfer it to your computer, then, you know, that's something that's going to like totally... change the way everybody's... You won't have to... I mean, I have a thermal imager. I never get to use it because Marty takes it out of my case all the time. But we've gotten some good stuff with it, but it's mainly still photography. Even when we've seen stuff moving, you
have to be quick. Yeah.
You have to pull the trigger enough times to get enough pictures that you can see the consecutive images. But if you bring something with thermal imaging capability under $1,000 or under $600 that does video... You change the whole aspect and the focus of the paranormal community, because thermal imaging is going to be, that's going to be another big thing. That's going to be like that step we took when we were using our film cameras, then with the digital, and then we suddenly realized we could do the infrared cameras static, and now we have the converted infrared cameras. This is like the next logical step to go. The only thing that I think people hold back is the price and the fact there's no video. So when you can do all that in one item, that's something big. And I had one in my hand. I was holding it and looking at it.
You want people on the shelf.
You're going to start seeing more positive
evidence. Because especially if you can switch through it, you see something on infrared, you can switch instantly over to thermal imaging.
Right.
You know, and I think probably eventually, just from looking at the basic design of it, this is maybe a year or two down the road, I could easily see this with four lenses. One filming regular color video, one filming infrared, one filming full spectrum, one filming thermal, simultaneously of the same picture.
Well,
and then you were able to pull the layers apart and compare them all.
That would be nice.
All in one thing.
All in one, simultaneous.
Ghost Hunters International is using four different cameras, but the way they have it set up, it's all...
Right. This would all be in one unit.
One unit. Yeah, that would be really nice.
And again, the price isn't restricted. I mean, people would pay thousands for that. From what I've been hearing about the price of what the potential thing can come out at, we're talking under $1,000 easily. So, like I said, technology now...
That could take a definite leap, yeah.
The tech is there. And a lot of the stuff, even with the thermal imaging...
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Sure.
I mean, I hope this isn't a stupid question, but you take a picture. We got some good evidence.
That is such a stupid question.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
We got a nice piece of evidence in full spectrum at the Bernardsville Library.
Okay.
And I was wondering, I asked Frank, I said, how do we know we couldn't have seen that in infrared?
That the problem with full spectrum is just that. If you're using full spectrum, that means you're seeing UV through visible light through infrared. Wide spectrum is just UV and just infrared. Now, whatever, I'm assuming you were using a full spectrum light.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you have UV and IR, or do you have UV, IR, and then red, blue, green?
UV and IR.
Okay, just UV, IR. So okay, so you're viewing wide spectrum. So whatever, it doesn't matter what the camera can see, you're only illuminating the UV and IR. You don't know what the anomaly's in, whether it could have been in IR, it could have been in UV. Because you took it at the same time with both lights, you don't know. Now, what we found...
The equipment will work great because you'll be able to differentiate that.
Right. You'd be able to strip away each one and say, okay, this is where it appeared.
And that will give you more information because you might not need the one.
Right. Well, what we're finding now is I had no idea that the modification process... Actually, a full-spectrum camera or a wide-spectrum camera, either one can actually see deeper into the infrared spectrum than an infrared camera because all the filters are removed. So there is no filter for infrared at all. Even the infrared camera has some filtering still there. So you see into the deep, deep infrared spectrum with a full-spectrum camera. So if you just use infrared light, that's when we suddenly got a run of apparition photos by four different investigators at three different locations using different cameras and different brand lights, but the combination was always the same. Full spectrum camera with infrared lighting only, and that we're getting great results with.
I'll try that. Interesting. I'll try that. So then, I guess, because we have infrared, you have the smaller infrared lights, illuminators, so we can try that.
Yeah, I mean...
We got to find out what works the best, you know. We're always trying to experiment with our equipment and see how you get the most out of it. You know?
There's the new Entity Electronic floodlights that have... They're the only ones that... they have two switches. They're wide-spectrum floodlights... So they have UV and IR, like your typical like wide-spectrum illuminators. The difference is that the UV lights and the IR lights are independent circuits. It has two batteries on it and two switches. So you could either have them UV and IR on, or you could have just the UV on or just the IR on. So basically it's three illuminators in one. So if you want to experiment with your full-spectrum camera just using UV that night, hey, there you go. You want to, or you stay in the same spot. What's that?
You sell them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to check one of those out. I think maybe my next visit up there, it might be one of those coming home with me. Mm-hmm. Let's try that concept.
I mean, that's, to me, I like the stuff. It's more things all crammed into one box. So to me, that's three different illuminators all in one. And that's what I wind up using with my full spectrum camera now. That way, if I'm in a spot where I'm feeling activity, or maybe other people are getting stuff or whatever, I might take a bunch of pictures just with UV on, then I'll switch over to just the IR, then I'll switch them both on. Now, I'm not doing it simultaneously, but I'm staying in the one area that seems to be active. So then if I do get a hit, you know, say if I get a hit just in the UV, and then I get a similar anomaly in the wide spectrum, I'm going to be able to lean towards the fact that it was in UV,
right,
because I got it in UV, but I didn't get it in IR. Little things like that sometimes, you know, we get caught up in, you know, or we get too bored, I think. Sitting in the dark for hours isn't the most exciting thing, because you're waiting for something to happen.
In sometimes fact, your investigations aren't exciting at all.
Yes, yeah, sometimes
you see things. I personally have I've been on investigations where I have seen one particular investigation where I did see a full body. That's the only time. I mean, other than that, I mean, I've been on several investigations now where I've never seen anything. Whereas other members might say they saw a shadow.
I'm going on stuff where I still go on stuff where I don't, nothing happens at all. Other people may pick up on stuff. I don't see anything. In the, we actually, one of our assistant directors, Bridget, so I guess she's been in the group well over a year, yeah, if not 2 years, never has seen anything at all before at that cemetery that night around that, where that church we were at. That was the first time she ever saw it. It was like, it was a three-dimensional, solid.
She was doing backflips.
Yeah, because she was so excited. It was the first time she ever seen anything at all. And someone else that night, too, I think it was Mandy or somebody else that had never seen her thing, saw something as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a very, you know, now they might have to wait like another 6 months, a year before they see something again. But, yeah, now they kind of believe. I think all this time they were thinking like, it's just you people that you have this special ability no one else has. Now they know that, like, okay, anybody else could possibly, you know, pick that up too.
It's usually after the first time you see something, it's all downhill from there.
Or uphill.
Or uphill, whichever way you want to.
So, Frank, there's still hope for you.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
The more you do it, the more chances you got.
That's it, you know. You gotta put yourself out there in order to have those experiences, right? Interesting.
We are just about out of time. I'm getting old. I can't see the little clock on the screen. So I don't know how you saw it, Marty, without your glasses.
I can see that far away. I can't see up
close. What's up close? It was holding it beyond arm's distance, yes, so she could see it.
I can see
it. Hey, we didn't know where this was going. It started that one direction, totally went a different direction, but it's always cool talking when everyone gets together to talk shop. I love the round table, mm-hmm, as opposed to an interview. Just let the conversation go where it may.
I think you get more information out there.
Yeah, and definitely it's like everyone learns from each other. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully people listening to this pick up something too. And, you know, if we get feedback on the Facebook page or the website, someone throwing in something that we didn't think of, you know, go share it with everybody. Yep. So I'd like to thank you guys for coming on. Thank Frank for not destroying the broadcast this time and allowing us to connect.
We're not showing up to the store.
Like, maybe that's the secret. I have to keep my distance.
That's right. So you can't get within like a 30-mile radius of Mount Holly, and we can connect with you on. So you'll be Skyping. The rest of your team can come right on in. We'll just Skype you from a distance, and that seems to work.
Off, just bad energy,
yeah, that's right. All right, everybody. We will see you next week. Until then...